Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. Do you think people are ruder these days? You're not alone. Danny Wallace thinks that we're experiencing a new wave of rudeness. And Danny decided to investigate this, and he published his findings in a book called F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It. I sat down to have a very polite, very pleasant, and very civil conversation with Danny to find out if we have reached peak rudeness.
Well, I hope we've reached peak rudeness. I hope there's no further we can really go. To me, it feels like the last few years, the world has just got ruder and ruder and ruder. And maybe part of that is because, you know, I'm getting older. But really, the evidence just seems to be tumbling from our phones and coming out of our TVs, and it's on the streets and in the cars. And it really does feel like this is, yeah, a very special time to be a rude person.
Mm-hmm. Is there something in particular you think that's causing this new rudeness?
I suppose there are lots and lots, really. Everybody has to have an opinion on absolutely everything, even if they have no real knowledge to back that opinion up. Having the opinion is the most important thing. And then also broadcasting that opinion to as many people as possible. And it's the rude opinions that really seem to cut through. And, you know, you can point the finger at social media and Twitter and Facebook. But the same is true for columnists who get more clicks, the worse their opinions are. Reality TV that edits mainly the people in who say the rudest and meanest stuff. And all of this establishes a kind of a precedent, if you like, just saying, this is how you get heard. These are the opinions that you should have. This is how we should be. And the more I looked into it and realized there was a bunch of science behind it as well, the more it seemed to explain how it spreads through our offices and our streets and our schools.
Yeah. Now, you became interested in this subject because of a personal experience you had, something which you refer to as the hot dog incident. What was the hot dog incident?
Yes, it sounds terrifying, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I was just trying to buy a hot dog. That's all I really wanted. And I've bought hot dogs before. I know how to do it. I'm quite accomplished at buying hot dogs. And my son wanted one as well. And there was a place selling hot dogs. So everything was in place for this very simple transaction to take place.
And this was in Britain. Sorry to interrupt.
This was in Britain. Yeah.
Right, okay.
It was a sort of a diner in a little kind of seaside town. And I don't know if you've ever walked in somewhere and the person behind the counter already seems to have taken against you for some reason.
Mm.
Like you turning up to buy a hot dog, even though that's the only reason she got up that morning was to make hot dogs for people like you, is somehow inconveniencing her. And, you know, she made me pay up front as if I was some kind of flight risk. But I was happy to do that. And so we did that. There was nowhere to sit. So we had to stand outside in the wind and the drizzle. And maybe about 15 minutes passed. And, you know, in America, that would be an unacceptable length of time to wait for cooked meat.
Definitely.
But it not being a traditional British dish, you know, we were happy to wait a little while. But after 15 minutes, I thought, well, maybe I should go and say something and just ask. And I did so very politely. I padded in. I had my hands up. I raised my eyebrows. I sort of pointed at my son as if it was his fault somehow, like a human shield. Just kind of going, I'm just wondering about my son's hot dog.
Yeah.
And she was furious that I had dared to chase up these hot dogs. She said, you don't understand how it works. We cook to order. There are tables ahead of you. And already I could see that we were on the cusp of something. So I decided to retreat. I went outside, delivered it as if it was good news. Hey, you know, they're on their way. Yeah. You know, they cook to order. But more and more time passed, and I had to go in a couple more times. And to cut a long story very short, after 1 hour and 1 minute of waiting for a hot dog that never arrived, I had to kind of put my foot down a bit. And she accused me of lying and rudely sort of called me out in front of all these people, saying it hadn't been an hour. But luckily I had the receipt because she'd made me pay up front. That was her mistake. So I was able to prove it. And then suddenly we got into this proper argument. Two grown-ups undertaking what should be one of the simplest tasks, you know. And my son is looking up, seeing a man who wants a hot dog and a woman who sells hot dogs not able to politely carry out this very, very simple task. And I ended up getting thrown out of the diner. She sort of threw coins down to scrabble around humiliatingly to pick up my refund. And I'm standing outside looking at my son thinking, how did this happen? How did two people get this so wrong? And when someone is, you know, inexplicably rude to you, it really stays with you. And you know, for me, I became slightly obsessed with it for a couple of days. I couldn't I couldn't understand why she'd been rude, or I was questioning, had I done something rude? And so, almost as an act of revenge, I decided to analyse that situation and many, many others by talking to as many experts in rudeness and, you know, out of rudeness that I could to establish who was right or wrong that day.
What happened, like, the first day or 2 days after the hot dog incident? Were there any things you did?
Well, I did something insane, which was I found myself driving past that diner the next night, and it was dark and it was empty. It was closed. The streets were deserted. And I found myself, as a grown man, making a very rude hand gesture at a building, which isn't normal. It's not normal behavior.
No.
And I started to wonder why it stayed with me this much. And that's when I decided I was going to investigate it. And one of the first things I did was commission a report. I phoned up a polling company and I put a questionnaire together. And we sent it out to 2,000 adults, just trying to find out where we are so that I could know where we were heading.
Yeah, and you call this survey, appropriately enough, the Wallace Report.
So, yes, I felt that gave it a certain gravitas.
Oh, it very much does. It does. Rather than just a survey, it's the Wallace Report. That's just soaked in gravitas.
Yeah.
So what were the most significant findings of the Wallace Report?
A significant amount of people actually would describe themselves as rude, and they're happy to do that. They're happy to go around thinking, yes, I'm a rude person. I found out that traditionally, when you ask people, who do you think of as rude, so many respondents said that really it's the young. They blame the parents. So you would assume that the people doing most of the rudeness are the young. But when I asked people to think about the last person who'd been significantly rude to them, and then to describe how old they thought they were, it seems like the rudest people tend to be between sort of 35 and 44. So it's the sort of the early middle-aged.
You have this great simile you use to describe the way the new rudeness sweeps across our world. It sweeps across our world the way a drunk clown sweeps across the first row of a circus audience, throwing not delightful buckets of glitter our way, but spraying us with a hose pipe full of his own filth.
Yes, which is quite a rude way of putting it.
Yeah, that's appropriate.
But I wanted to get across exactly how awful I feel this new rudeness is. And certainly current events haven't helped. The election in America has divided the country straight down the middle, so you've got people kind of at each other's throats. Brexit in Britain has done much the same. Clean divide, almost 50-50 down the middle. And it's got to the point where all you need to do is know how someone voted on one issue 2 years ago to know whether or not you're going to get on. And that has led to people being almost like on a hair trigger. They're just kind of, they're ready to go. They want to have that fight, that argument, and they assume they know everything about the other person.
Yeah. Is it possible that rudeness spreads in the same way that a meme can go viral on the internet?
Yes, absolutely. Scientists have sort of shown that it's almost airborne. It's like a neurotoxin, they call it.
Wow.
And it can spread throughout an office or a workplace, you know, very, very easily. If you even just witness someone else being rude, you are then much more likely to find rudeness later on in the day and to react to it badly, even rudeness where there is none. And we take it home with us as well. If you have a bad day at work, traditionally you think, oh, well, I'll go home, you know, I'll watch some TV, I'll have a gin and tonic, and the world will be great. But actually, it plays on your mind. It messes with the frontal lobes, is the area of the brain that is most affected by rudeness. And that's the part of the brain that deals with working memory and the task at hand. So you find that you're unable to do basic tasks as well as you would on a normal day. They showed that people who just experience rudeness will be far worse at doing simple anagrams, for example, or my favourite, coming up with creative uses for a brick. and at home, it means you can't switch off and you're slightly grouchier. You won't be able to relax. Your sleep might be disturbed. Perhaps you will have an extra G&T, meaning that in the morning you're snappier. If you snap at your partner, they then take that rudeness with them to their workplace. And so these strains of rudeness are spreading over the world like a yawn we catch from each other.
Yeah, that's interesting because it almost seems kind of counterintuitive to me on one level, because you would think people witnessing rudeness would be more sensitive and not want to imitate it, you know, not want to be rude themselves, I would think, and say, geez, I want to be extra, make sure I'm not being rude to people.
Well, absolutely. And one scientist in particular, a guy called Dr. Amir Erez, who's a real expert in rudeness, he said he never believed in any of this stuff. He never believed in the effects of rudeness. And he started to do these experiments and these tests, and he says that every time he does, he finds something else, and it's just shocking. And he told me that it doesn't even have to be a huge moment of rudeness that you've witnessed. It can just be mildly rude words.
Wow.
Somehow these words bring about associations, memories or experiences, and it means that we are much more likely to be on edge, which is fine if you're a writer trying to buy a hot dog, but not great if you are a doctor who needs to concentrate and have full use of their frontal lobes. It's been shown that if a doctor experiences rudeness at the start of their day, the next five patients will be affected because the doctor is unable to concentrate in the same way. They are less able to take in new information, so they will fixate on the original diagnosis even when new evidence is coming in. Teams of surgeons have been shown through experiments done in Tel Aviv that if they experience rudeness, the teams that did would be 50% less effective at the surgery they were about to perform. They wouldn't be able to communicate with each other. They would pick up the wrong instruments, administer the wrong drugs. They wouldn't resuscitate properly. And in these simulations, they would have lost the lives of the people that the simulations were supposed to represent. This book started as quite a silly thing about a hot dog, but the further I got into it, the darker I found the effects of rudeness, because they're real and terrifying.
At one point, you became interested in the work of Dr. Brad Blanton, this psychotherapist who practices something that he calls radical honesty. And you actually interviewed Blanton, and you asked him about how you should have acted during the hot dog incident, employing his principles of radical honesty. What did he tell you?
Well, he thought I went about things the wrong way because I was being polite. Politeness is my go-to. I think we should all be polite.
Absolutely.
I think etiquette is outdated, but politeness really is all we need. And that just means lubricating the day with, you know, pleases and thank yous. And if you can hold a door open for someone, you should. Blanton thinks that is deceitful. He thinks when I'm being polite to someone, I'm lying to them. If I don't say to them, I don't like your haircut and I'm not keen on you as a person, I am robbing our relationship of truth, whereas I think I'm being empathetic and kind, and I would prefer to live in a world like that.
Yeah, me too.
But he says if we get rid of that layer of civility, then we're going to have a much more honest discussion with each other. And so I decided to attend a radical honesty workshop in Germany, a country known for its straight talking already.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, and I have to say, I tried radical honesty, and it was several of the most excruciating hours of my British life.
Why? What was so, in a nutshell, what was so bad about it?
Well, it's a bunch of people sitting around with no filter, basically, kind of being encouraged. Well, I'm not sure it's fair to say they're encouraged to be rude. They're encouraged to speak, and they're not encouraged to hide behind words.
So what advice do you have for us to help make the world less rude and more polite, especially since I'm Canadian and you're Scottish from Dundee, Scotland, but you live in the UK now. So we are considered among the most polite people. So I think it's kind of up to us to sort of set the tone. And you've done your part with this book and talking about it. But what can we in general do to make the world a more polite place and bring back a new kind of politeness?
Well, we can look out for each other. Mm-hmm. We can stand up for each other. We can shine a spotlight on rudeness when it happens. And we can defend strangers in the way that we would feel we would defend our friends. Very often, people, when they're being rude, they're doing so because they feel they can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
They feel they're not part of the group, whereas the rest of us operate by these unwritten rules which unite this group. So when someone steps outside and they get away with it, very often we let them because we feel that somehow they must be special. They've earned the right to do it, whereas they haven't. And it degrades society. It coarsens it. And it chips away at civility. And so by reminding people gently and non-aggressively, sometimes with a joke or a smile or whatever you can do, you hold that looking glass up to them. Because mm-hmm. we're always looking into the eyes of other people for how we are doing. Does this person like me? Have I offended them? Am I doing all right in life? And when you look into that looking glass and you realize, wow, I've just been, yeah, no, I have actually been rude. It's quite a powerful thing.
Danny Wallace is the author of F You Very Much, Understanding the Culture of Rudeness and What We Can Do About It.